Hey everybody, and welcome back. Today we are going to be breaking down the main card for UFC Fight Night Vieira versus Tate. This fucking arm for this microphone has been driving me insane. It just keeps, I mean, I've got the fucking, like, you got to crank these, like, it's hard to see it from this angle, but like there's these little things that you have to twist on the side. I've got this one, like the fucking base of it, like tightened as far as it'll go. And it just keeps like slowly like, it never used to do this shit, man. So anyway, I'm just letting you guys know, if you see me constantly fucking with this thing throughout the podcast episode, that's why. Anyway, we got some pretty good fights lined up today. Obviously Misha Tate is returning, not returning, she made a big return against Marion Renault where she picked up a third round TKO win, but she's fighting a more legit contender in Ketlin Vieira, right? A woman who was really hyped up before her knockout loss to Irene Aldana. I think a lot of people saw her as maybe a promising title contender, right? So, some interesting matchups on this card. But before we get into breaking it down, I really want to take a look at some of these headlines, right? Like, one thing that keeps popping up that I keep seeing over and over again is that Kamaru Usman wants to box Canelo Alvarez. And, man, I personally just feel like it's a terrible idea. I feel like Kamaru Usman is undoubtedly one of the best, if not the best, pound-for-pound mixed martial artist currently active today, right? Bad motherfucker. And I think that he thinks because he's so fundamentally sound and because he has a good jab and stuff, right, like that he might have a chance against Canelo Alvarez. But Canelo Alvarez is probably the best boxer alive right now in terms of pure skill, right? I would say so. And he's in his prime. He's 31 fucking years old. The odds that Canelo Alvarez are gonna lose to Kamaru Usman in a boxing match are very, very slim, right? And I know that Kamaru has some power and stuff, but when you watch him, if he starts getting frustrated, like if he starts getting tagged with stuff, his boxing technique will get a little bit sloppy. He'll start winging some shots once in a while and stuff like that. And when you're in a pure boxing match and you start getting touched up, that kind of shit isn't gonna fly. I think that he could land on Canelo. I think he could maybe use his size and apply some pressure against Canelo. But overall, he's not going to be able to string combinations. He's not going to be able to keep up with the footwork. He's not going to be able to keep up with all the slipping and stuff that he has to do in order to stay alive in a fight like that. It's a different animal, man, and I don't think you fuck around with boxing. I think the best option for Kamaru Usman right now is to just stay in your fucking lane. I understand that it's a lot of money. Like, from that perspective, if you want to go do that, do it. But I don't think your odds of winning are very good. I think your reputation, when it's all said and done, would be better if you just stayed in your lane, kept defending your belt, and kept taking big money fights in the UFC, right? Especially because you got like guys like Khamzat Chimaev knocking on the door. And speaking of him, that's kind of how I want to transition into this next topic that I want to cover. Khamzat Chimaev and Jack Hermanson recently just had a freestyle wrestling match where Khamzat won pretty soundly. Like, as early on, he lands a couple takedowns early on, gets up on points, and Hermanson does manage to get like to double unders, and the match kind of slows down as it moves on and gets a takedown of his own. But even when he got the takedown, like, the movement of Khamzat Chimaev allowed him to get up on top. And all right, some background on this. Jack Hermanson is a Greco-Roman national champion, right? Like, he started wrestling Greco-Roman style when he was like 9 years old. So he's a very competent wrestler. And, you know, when you see Khamzat go out and just blow through him and take him down immediately like he did, you can't help but think, if this is an MMA fight, right, this is why Hamzat's so successful. Because even in a pure wrestling match where Jack Hermanson, who is very competent, is obviously a very high-level wrestler, right, when they're in a match like this, Khamzat was still able to implement that early on. And when you start combining that with ground and pound, which he's very good at and stuff like that, that's what makes him so dangerous, right? So in a pure wrestling match against a guy who definitely knows what the fuck is going on in Jack Hermanson, he blew right through him immediately. Now, if that's a fight, it leaves you with the impression that, fuck, I mean, he could do that in a fight. And Jack Hermanson fights at middleweight, and Hamzat's been fighting most of his fights at welterweight at 170, right? So, and Jack Hermanson's also ranked number 6 in the world, right? A very competent grappler, very dangerous, but you just got to see, like, the skill level and especially the initial burst. And also, guys, I think it's important, like, the match got pretty close, I'm thinking of Gerald Meerschaert for some reason because Chimaev knocked him out, but Jack Hermanson, you know, as, like I said, as the match wore on, he was able to find a little bit more success, but man, a wrestling match between two guys like that, wrestling is incredibly difficult, right? And it's pretty incredible how you can watch a guy in MMA kind of use his wrestling and blitz through people. But then when you watch two high-level wrestlers actually go at it in a wrestling match, it kind of, wrestling's very difficult, man, and to get an advantage over your opponent is hard, right? So for Chimaev to do that and do it so quickly, right? And like I said, not that Hermanson didn't find success later, but this is a wrestling match. It's not a fight, right? Like, I think that I wish I could express to you guys, like, how difficult it is for Chimaev to land a takedown like he did against Hermanson early on in that fight, like early on in that wrestling match. Like, it's so much harder for him to pull that off in an actual wrestling match than it is MMA, right? And also, when you change like rule sets in fighting and stuff in combat sports, like one of my favorite examples is if you watch Gordon Ryan grapple against Pat Downey in a jiu-jitsu match, like I think jiu-jitsu is like a little bit more pure grappling because you can go to your back and it's not over. Like, there's still a fight when it gets to the ground and you're on your back, right? Anyway, Gordon Ryan beats Pat Downey probably every single time they have a match, right? But when they did a wrestling match and Downey ragdolled him, man. Ragdolled Gordon Ryan. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like, wrestling is very difficult. So if you get two high-level wrestlers that are going at it, it's going to be much harder for Hamzat to get a takedown on him than it is in an MMA fight against most guys who don't have that background and who are preparing for other elements of the fight, like the kicks and the punches and all that shit, right? Like, it's going to, when you see Chimaev go in against a guy like Hermanson, who, like I said, Greco-Roman national champion in Sweden, right? When he goes and blitzes him immediately like that in the opening of a wrestling match, you get to see why it's so scary in a fight. Because if he can do that in a wrestling match against a very good wrestler early on, what's he going to do to high-level guys in MMA? And I'm not even fucking around, like Israel Adesanya. What's Adesanya going to do to stop that shit early on in a fight? Fuck, man. Also, unpopular opinion, I think Khamzat Chimaev has a better chance to beat Israel Adesanya than he does Kamaru Usman, because Usman has a very strong wrestling base and he fights behind a jab, right? And his strikes are a little bit more fundamental. Like, I think that, man, I think Chimaev has a better chance of beating someone like Adesanya, because if he gets him down early, it's going to be so smothering and so suffocating for Adesanya. He's not going to be able to keep up with that, right? Man, when you look at him, the more I watch him, and like I said, watching him compete in a wrestling match and seeing the ease that he took Hermanson down with early on, it makes you scared for guys in MMA who don't have that level of wrestling. He's a scary motherfucker, dude. All right. Let's move on to breaking this main card down. So the first fight on the card is going to be a bantamweight bout between Davy Grant and Adrian Yanez. Now, Davy Grant, 13-5, right? Plus 245 underdog in this. I think that's kind of bullshit, man. I think the odds on these two first fights that are opening up the main card are kind of fucked. Now, Adrian Yanez is a very talented kickboxer, Muay Thai, whatever, right? Like, he's obviously ahead of a lot of the guys that he fights. He's also willing to take a shot, right? Like, he eats a lot of shots in his fights. Like, if you look at even back in his LFA fight against Estrada, right? He's eating shots in that, but he's just more. He's more precise and more fluid in the striking department than his opponents, right? But he doesn't always stay defensively sound in the exchanges. But his offense is so slick and so, you know, so fast. He's so, like I said, his technique is really sharp that it doesn't really matter because he overwhelms his opponent most of the time. In a fight against a guy like Davy, and another thing, Adrian Yanez, he's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, right? But we really haven't seen anyone test him or put him on his back. Estrada, who was a guy who wrestled in high school, now in that LFA bout that I was talking about, this was before he obviously, Yanez came onto the contender series, right, and earned his contract where he knocked the guy out in the first round, Brady Huang, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, but in this fight against Estrada, LFA 78, the one that preceded his Dana White contender series premiere, Estrada was a guy who was a high school wrestler, right, had a very strong wrestling background, and only attempted one takedown at the end of the third round, and Yanez, like, was beating him up over the course of the fight, in my opinion, like dotting him up. So going for a takedown that late in the fight, like, you might think you're going to seal up the third round or something like that. Yeah, maybe, but it was fended off pretty easily, but you're tired. Davy Grant is a guy who I think he kind of fell in love with his hands a little bit over the last few fights, but he's a guy who can wrestle, man. And, you know, you see him get on top of, like, Chito Vera ended up beating him up over the course of the fight when they rematched. Like, Davy Grant beat Chito Vera back in, like, 2016, I believe. And then they rematched at the, in, like, June of this year, right? So just a few months ago. And Chito Vera kind of beat him up in that fight, right? Made adjustments. And Chito Vera is obviously much better than the first time they fought. But my point is that Davy Grant made the fight difficult for Chito Vera. It wasn't an easy fight for him to win, right? And I'm telling you, man, Grant has this awkwardness and this movement where it makes it hard to get a read on him. And one of the other things that I see out of Yanez is that when guys slide off to his right, he has a hard time cutting them off a little bit. He tends to follow. Not a lot, but just a little bit. He follows just a little bit. And Grant is going to be a guy who's changing stances. He's going to be using a lot of kicks. He's going to be attacking from a lot of unorthodox positions. And I think that creates a problem for Yanez, at least early on. Here's the thing. There's a lot of factors going into this fight, right? Like, and it's not that I don't... I think Yanez wins. Like, I think Yanez is just too technical. But if you look at a lot of his fights, like, especially the best example is Randy Costa. When Randy Costa came out in the first round, he absolutely put it on Yanez, like probably a 10-8 round, like started fucking him up. And then, you know, Yanez started to get a little bit of momentum back at the end of the round and then came out in the second round when Costa was tired and just fucked him up. So Yanez is willing to like kind of wait for some of that energy to come out of the fighter, right? I think Davy Grant, his cardio, you will see him fade a little bit in the third round, but I think his cardio will last longer. I think, like I said, he attacks awkwardly, and I think he has a surprising amount of power. He throws these weird hooks, right? Like, they come out kind of wide, and they're not very technically sound, but when he lands and starts throwing them together, you can tell, like, when the first one connects and the second one follows up, it creates this, like, weird momentum or this, like, an accumulation of shots, right? Like, boom, 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 and you can tell it starts rocking the guys. And they get caught off guard by this. And like I said, it's coming from weird angles. He's hard to time. He moves a lot. And if Yanez gets caught following him around the octagon, that could be trouble because he might fall into traps, right? And also, Davy Grant is a pretty good take. Like I said, he's kind of fallen in love with his hands a little bit. He knocked out Martin Day, then Jonathan Martinez. But he can wrestle. Now, we brought up how Adrian Yanez has his black belt, right? It's going to be interesting to see if Davy Grant, once he gets Yanez down, if Yanez is going to be able to work his way back to his feet. I personally think that like Grant is pretty good at getting the takedown, and he'll hunt for them pretty relentlessly, like he'll go for them over and over. I don't think his control is going to be enough to keep Yanez down. I think Yanez, this is a tough fight, man, and it's not that like, I think Yanez wins. Like I said, I think he kind of just waits out the storm a little bit, waits for some of the gas to pour. He's going to be landing shots of his own too, right? Like, I think that Davy Grant is one of those guys who's going to leave a lot of openings for Yanez to capitalize on because he swings so wild. And like I said, the fact that Yanez is willing to sit down in the pocket and trade probably gives him an advantage in this. The fact that he's a black belt is going to probably allow him to get back to his feet, even though you haven't seen a lot of the groundwork from Yanez. Oh, and what I wanted to bring up from the Estrada fight is I think maybe when guys get in there against him, they realize that the takedown opportunities aren't there as abundantly as they thought they were going to be, right? So it might be one of those situations where you get in there with him and you're like, fuck, I really don't want to shoot on him. You can just feel that it's a bad idea, right? So I'm taking Yanez. I think he's too technical. I think he's going to be able to apply pressure on Davy Grant, keep him on the back foot, things he has to watch out for. Don't get caught following. Don't get caught up in the chaos of Davy Grant. Keep an eye out for the takedowns. If he does those things and just stays calm, I think that he might lose the first round and Davy Grant will look good, but I think if he settles in and really starts looking to counter Davy Grant, the opportunities will be there. And I think he wins, but I just think that the odds, Davy Grant at +245, to me, that's outrageous. I think Davy Grant is actually a really good fighter. He's dangerous. He's unorthodox. And I think he gives Yanez trouble. I think Yanez wins the fight. He's technical. I think he kind of waits for that storm to come and for, you know, Davey, he kind of waits to pick up on some patterns and start landing some offense of his own. But Davy Grant, in my opinion, is a live dog in this fight, and he's worth throwing a little bit of money on just because it's fighting. And what are the I don't know the implied odds, but what is it, like 19% at plus 250 or something like that? You can't tell me Davy Grant only has a 15% chance of winning this fight or whatever the fuck it comes out to. I just think his odds are way better than that. I think that he presents a lot of problems, and I think you're going to see that. And I think Giannis is going to have to make a lot of adjustments in this fight in order to win, but I do think he picks it up. I could see him knocking him out in the second or third round. But like I said, I'm not betting on Giannis. I'm not that confident in this. I think that Davy Grant is a much more challenging problem for him than the odds are indicating. All right, moving on. Next, we have number 5 ranked Joanne Wood, not Calderwood, right? This is fun. I was going through like ESPN and MMA Junkie and all that stuff, getting ready for the fights, right? And it kept popping up. It said Joanne Wood, and I thought it was a typo. Turns out Joanne Calderwood got married during her training camp, and her last name changed from Calderwood to Wood. Pretty fucking, it led to a lot of confusion for me, but I was just watching the press conference and stuff, and apparently she booked her wedding, and then like a week later got a call from the UFC for the fight. So, recently married, last name changed from Calderwood to Wood. She's ranked number 5 in the world. And this is an even more ridiculous one to me, guys. Plus 290 underdog against Tyler Santos. Now, Tyler Santos is very talented, right? Her last 3 opponents, though, Roxanne Modafferi, Jillian Robertson, Molly McCann. All solid opponents. Roxanne obviously ranked the highest out of those. But guys, Roxanne Modafferi is good. Don't get me wrong. I love Roxanne. But she's not, to me, she doesn't win a fight against Joanne Calderwood, right? And what you really got to see is like Tyler Santos, what you get to see in a lot of her fights is that she's a very explosive striker. I think she gets a little bit sloppy with her left hand. She kind of swipes with it sometimes, as opposed to like, you know what I mean? Like there's like a loopiness to it. But otherwise, her punch, she has a very good jab. Her punches come straight down the pipe. Like I said, a little bit of awkwardness with her left hand sometimes when she throws. But for the most part, everything's explosive. She's going to be a lot faster than Joanne Calderwood. But I think she has a tendency to headhunt until she gets in situations like the clinch where she's really... This is one of the more interesting things to watch out for in this fight is going to be the clinch battles between Joanne Calderwood and Tyler Santos, because they're both very good there. They're both very good at getting that Muay Thai clinch, getting their hands behind her head, and landing knees and stuff from there in those tight positions, right? So that's going to be something interesting to watch out for. I think they're pretty even there. So those clinch battles might end up coming down to not who's landing better during the exchange, but who's landing after they break, right? Who's landing the shots after they break and who's following up. Tyler Santos is also a very... She didn't start training until she was in her teenage years. I think she was 16 or 19 when she started picking up Muay Thai and then picked up Jiu-Jitsu and all these other things afterwards, right? And she's very talented, like I said, very explosive. But man, Joanne Calderwood's last 3 opponents, Lauren Murphy, who challenged for the title against Valentina Shevchenko, Jessica Ai, and Jennifer Maia, right? Joanne Calderwood has undoubtedly seen the more talent, the better talent in her last few fights. And personally, I thought she won her last fight against Lauren Murphy. I thought she won rounds 1 and 2, 1 and 3, lost round 2 for sure, but just dotting Lauren Murphy up and just constantly touching her. And I think that's the thing that people are sleeping on JoJo about in this fight. Like, Joanne Calderwood is very good at just touching you, and not just like Tyler Santos has a tendency to headhunt a little bit. Not Joanne Calderwood. JoJo will piece up every single section of your body, right? And she's capable of throwing head kicks up there that are powerful. She'll always just reaching out and touching you, front kicks to the body, leg kicks, head kicks, everything. She attacks with a very wide variety. And I think that her demeanor, her soft-spoken attitude, her sort of like, and just the way she fights, she's not like a fucking like a marauder, right? Like, she's not coming at you like that. She's just very technically sound and very composed. I don't get it, guys. Like, Tyler Santos, like I said, very talented, very explosive, a very good wrestler, right? Very good at getting in and getting her hands locked together underneath the butt of her opponent and elevating them and getting her takedowns. She's a very good wrestler. But Joanne Calderwood, people forget, man, she took Jennifer Maia down before Maia armbarred her in a jiu-jitsu transition, essentially. And you look at her ear, man, she's got cauliflower ear. Joanne Calderwood knows how to wrestle. She's a very fine, well-rounded martial artist. And plus 290 against a girl who hasn't fought the level of competition that she has, to me, it's fucking disrespectful. I think Joanne Calderwood is another live dog in this fight. And not only is she a live dog, I think she wins this fight. I think that just over the course of 3 rounds, the style of Tyler Santos, where she's going to be headhunting a little bit more than JoJo, and where she's going to be looking for these takedown attempts, and JoJo's going to make it difficult for her. When it gets to the ground, she's probably going to get back up, right? JoJo's long. Probably the longest girl that Tyler Santos has faced, so when she can't hold her down anymore, what's she going to do when JoJo gets back up and just starts touching her again repeatedly? That's, to me, that's the biggest difference. I think JoJo is going to beat up every piece of the body, and she might lose situations. But as the fight wears on, I think that body work, that leg work, and just the well-rounded, like, abilities of Joanne Calderwood, I think Joanne wins this fight via decision. I think you see Tyler Santos kind of start off hot and then get a little bit disheartened as JoJo just keeps touching her and just keeps staying the course. JoJo's been in these situations before. Like I said, she's very composed. This is a big moment for Tyler Santos, fighting the number 5 ranked girl in the world. You have an opportunity to crack into the top 5 and start getting these fights that, you know, are going to propel you towards the title. Man, I like Joanne Calderwood, though. Joanne Wood. I'm sorry, I keep saying Calderwood. Joanne Wood, the newly married Joanne Wood. I'm taking her in this fight, man. I really think she's going to win. I think that it's going to be eye-opening for Tyler Santos, what that level... Because, like I said, you watch Joanne Calderwood, and I think people watch her and go, there's nothing really impressive about her. No, Joanne Calderwood can fucking fight. And I think that, like, even if she does lose this fight, which is a possibility, I don't want to discount Tyler Santos, right? Like, she's a very legit martial... She's very legit as well. I have in my notes, very well-rounded. Like, does almost everything well. It's just when you get to that level and somebody's just consistently touching you, even though you're cracking them with your best stuff, and they just keep coming and just keep coming, and just it's volume, 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 volume. And it might not be hurting a lot at first, but by the third round, those strikes start to matter. So I'm taking Joanne Wood in this fight. I like the underdog. All right. The next bout is a bantamweight bout, 135 pounds between Ronnie Yahya and Kyung Ho Kong. For me, this, you know, the odds on this one are pretty close. Ronnie Yahya's at plus 100. I'm not trying to make this like a betting thing. I'm just like, sometimes I look at the odds, and this is one of those fights that I look at the odds and I don't really know what the odds makers are thinking. Ronnie Yahya is a plus 100 slight underdog right now against Kyung Ho Kong. Ronnie Yahya, though, is a guy who he really has to like get on top and secure a submission, right? Or just get on top of a guy. And his best chance of securing a submission are going to be early on from the top position while they're dry. Kyung Ho Kong is a guy who is a really good wrestler, and I think he's going to have a huge advantage over Ronnie Yahya on the feet. I think his jab's a little bit more smooth. He's more explosive. He's going to get in and out of the exchanges a lot cleaner. And I cannot emphasize this enough. In a mixed martial arts bout, it is imperative to get on top. You see great jiu-jitsu players get on their back against guys who aren't as talented as them, and then they struggle from that position because it's hard to be on the bottom in a fight because it's more than just grabbing your opponent and trying to sweep them and set. When there's a threat of getting hit in the mouth as you're going through these transitions and stuff that you normally get away with in like any sort of grappling situation in jiu-jitsu, it's much more difficult to get to your feet. That's why you always hear guys like Bisping, and he's 100% right, say, 2 or 3 submission attempts, if they don't work, time to get your feet to the hips, kick the opponent off, and get back up. And he's 100% right. Kyung Ho Kong, in my opinion, is a better wrestler than Ronnie Yahya. His timing on his level changes, just everything that he does is gonna, and even if Ronnie Yahya gets him to the ground, I think that Kyung Ho Kong is gonna be able to scramble. And just, it's imperative to get on top in a fight. And I think Kyung Ho Kong is going to be leagues better. And he's not even that great on the feet. Leagues better than Ronnie Yahya on the feet. And I think that Kyung Ho Kong is going to have a much better chance of getting on top during the scrambling or during the grappling transitions than Ronnie Yahya is. I think Kyung Ho Kong wins this fight, man. I don't think he submits Ronnie Yahya, but I just think the wrestling, it's super important, especially when you got a guy like Ronnie Yahya who strictly relies on his jiu-jitsu. So, man, I'm taking Kyung Ho Kong in this one. I think that he just, like I said, I think he gets on top. I think he holds position. And I think that even when you see Ronnie Yahya get into advantageous positions, Kyung Ho Kong is going to be able to scramble to get out of them, right? And as you're hunting for those submissions, when that's your only method of victory, it's tough to win a fight against a pretty well-rounded guy who can wrestle. So I got Kyung Ho Kong in this one. Next fight, welterweight bout that I'm super excited for. Sean Brady fighting out of Philadelphia against Michael Chiesa. Two great grapplers, right? You look at Michael Chiesa. Michael Chiesa is a guy, man, who is an incredibly gifted grappler. But again, kind of like we were talking about in the last fight, particularly when he gets on top, he's a better wrestler and he can find submissions from the top position. But if you look at his most recent fight against Vicente Luque, got kicked in the leg and you could tell it bothered him. Immediately shoots a takedown, gets it all great, right? Controlling Vicente Luque, takes his back. But when he gets into these jiu-jitsu situations, he makes crucial mistakes, right? That lead to him losing control. And he's also susceptible to getting submitted, right? Anthony Pettis tapped him out. Kevin Lee tapped him out. Vicente Luque tapped him out. So despite the fact that he's a very good wrestler and a very good grappler, he has holes in his games where if he gets into he's very good on top, right? Like I said, but when he gets into situations where he has to try a submission on a guy, like he submitted Carlos Condit, but that was from the top position. When he's on a guy's back, he's going to make mistakes. And when you look at Sean Brady, guys, Sean Brady is a bad motherfucker. Like, if you break down his technique and just look at his technique, he's never sacrificing control. He is always controlling. He's always accounting for all the little details before he advances into the next position. He doesn't go for these, like, fucking bullshit submissions, right? He sets everything up beforehand. He accounts for everything. His level of control on the ground is excellent. And I think his hands are going to be a little bit better than Michael Chiesa's, right? I think there's some work to do in that department, but in particular, he has a very strong left hook. And he is just he's just going to be better on the feet, I think. And I think that even if Chiesa gets a guy like Brady on top, there are levels to jiu-jitsu, guys, right? Like, Jake Matthews is a black belt. When Sean Brady got him to the ground, he dominated him. It wasn't even really close. Like, Jake Matthews couldn't even offer up any sort of offense. And you can tell that Brady's dense, he's big, he's strong. If he gets on top of you, he's not willingly just going to let you back up. Like, you're going to have to really work to get back up. And when you see someone like Jake Matthews, who's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, get put on his back and can't do anything, you know that the motherfucker controlling him is legit. Sean Brady is very legit. He's got nasty submission setups from almost everywhere. And when he gets on top, you're probably not getting back up, right? And, you know, like I said, I think the fact that he is a better striker than Chiesa is probably going to force shots out of Chiesa. And when they get into grappling exchanges, I just think Brady's better there. I think that if Chiesa takes him down, Brady's going to be able to take advantage of the fact that Chiesa's control sometimes is lacking. He allows a lot of scrambling to take place. I just think that Brady is going to always be able to win the grappling transitions and once again get up on top where it's important. And once he gets on top of Chiesa, I think you'll notice that Brady does a much better job of controlling those situations than Chiesa did when he was on top of him. Sean Brady's a bad motherfucker, man. 14-0, -165 favorite in this fight, and I'm taking him in this one. I think he taps Chiesa out in the third round. I think it's going to take a while to get Chiesa there. Chiesa's going to be very well prepared. And, you know, it might take, whether it's stuffing takedowns or whether it's landing a shot on Chiesa, whatever it is, I just think that eventually this fight, just by the nature of these two, ends up on the ground at some point. And when it gets there, if Brady's on bottom, he's going to be able to reverse and get on top more easily than Chiesa will. And if Brady's on top, I don't think Chiesa's getting out from underneath him, man. Maybe in a couple scrambles, like maybe once or twice, but over the course of the fight, I think this is a difficult fight for Michael Chiesa, right? He's going up against a very strong grappler. And like I said, a guy who is a bad mother. His level of control and shit, man, you know what I mean? But I just think Sean Brady's too much for him on the ground. I really think that. I think that there are guys that when you look at their technique, you go, oh, fucking Sean Brady's one of those guys. So I got Sean Brady. Third round submission of some sort, right? Maybe an arm triangle, something similar to that. Something from the top position. I think Brady also is one of those guys who realizes in a fight how important it is to get. You saw in the Jake Matthews fight, he got dropped and immediately, like Matthews got on top of him, he immediately reversed position and got on top. He's a guy who understands the importance of being on top too. So both of these guys do. I just think Brady will be better at getting there. All right, main event, Ketlin Vieira versus Miesha Tate. This is an interesting one. But again, I think that this fight kind of boils down to like the same as the last one. Ketlin Vieira is she's very powerful, right? And if you see like her fight against Sajara Eubanks, she's willing to go in there and get in a firefight, man. Like she'll go in there and fucking swing. She punches hard. Again, there's not like the crispness to the technique. Like she strings it together and she's powerful and stuff like that. But I'm talking about like just in terms of pure, like, striking technique, like, if you watch Sajara Eubanks in that, in my opinion, like, there's a little bit more fluidity to the way she throws strikes. Not that she was more successful. Catlin Vieira did a way better job controlling the range, the distance, all that stuff, right? But in terms of actually throwing the strike with the proper technique, like, Sajara Eubanks, I think, had better technique. So I think Catlin Vieira is lacking in that department a little bit. Although, if you can do your time, it doesn't always matter that you throw your strikes technically, like, perfect, right? Like, if you got the timing down and the distance and all that, it doesn't really matter. If you find ways, Davy Grant's a perfect example. We talked about him earlier. You got to find ways to make your fight style successful, and Catlin Vieira does that, right? Her most recent bout was a loss to Yana Kunitskaya, which personally, I thought she won that fight. This was, again, a fight, though, where it boiled down to who was the better offensive wrestler. In the first round, Catlin Vieira was. Then in the second round, Yana Kunitskaya came out and just completely turned the tables on her and took her down and dominated her throughout the second round. And then the third round, Catlin Vieira, like, took Yana Kunitskaya down, ended up on her back, couldn't really do anything with it, although she controlled her for most of the fight. But then Kunitskaya got on top and landed some shots that I think maybe won the judges over. I wasn't too upset with it going to Kunitskaya. I didn't think it was like, but I just thought that based on the amount of time that Catlin Vieira controlled Kunitskaya on the ground, that maybe it would be, you know, maybe it would, they would lean in favor of her. But that second round against Yana Kunitskaya was very telling to me. And again, we're in a situation where I know that Misha Tate's older, but she looks like she's in phenomenal shape. She looked good against Marion Renault. And she's also, I don't think she's going to get sit in the pocket and exchange the way that Sajara Eubanks is against Catlin Vieira. Like, Sajara Eubanks kind of, in my opinion, had a difficult time, like, covering that distance. If you watch Misha Tate, the way she's been, the way she fought against Marion Renault, she's fighting with that long jab and taking long, big steps into her opponent, right, and covering a lot of distance. So I think Misha Tate is going to back her up with her striking by taking big movements, back her up against the cage, and just get the takedown. And this is a 5-round fight. I got Misha Tate winning this one. I just think that her veteran, like, the fact that she's a veteran, her fight IQ, all that shit is going to come into play. And once again, I think Misha Tate is a little bit of a better wrestler. And if she gets on top of Catlin Vieira, I don't think Catlin Vieira is going to get her off. And again, a 5-round fight, you got to think Misha Tate's been in this situation plenty of times before, and this is a big spot for Catlin Vieira to be headlining a card. I really think that it boils down to the fact that Misha Tate is better at getting on top and controlling her opponent from there. So I'm taking Misha Tate, guys. I really think she's just going to go out and out-wrestle her. That's what I think's going to... I think she's going to control her on the ground. And if you look at that second round against Yana Kunitskaya, the person who is more aggressive and is wrestling offensively is going to win. And I think Tate is a way better wrestler than Yana Kunitskaya, right? And this is a 5-round fight, like I said, via... I think Misha Tate at -105 is a great bet. I really think she wins this fight. I just think that the wrestling's too much, man. I think that the striking of Vieira might be a little bit scary, but like I said, I think Misha Tate's going to throw that kind of long jab where she's stepping into it, just get Vieira backing up, get the fight up against the cage, and drag it to the ground repeatedly until she gets, like, a ground. She might get a ground and pound or a submission victory in this one, guys. Like, Misha Tate, I think, is just a... there's a lot of fights on this card where this, it's going to boil down to this. She's just a better wrestler. So I'm taking Tate, man. Neither of their striking is uber impressive to me. I think if they got into, like, a striking war, Catlin Vieira probably wins. She's more powerful. Like I said, I think she does understand range and distance well. Misha Tate's striking, I think, is a little bit sloppy. But when she gets to the ground, man, she can wrestle. She can wrestle, and she understands the importance of maintaining that position. So I think she's going to go out and take it to Catlin Vieira tonight. I think it's going to be a big night for Misha Tate. So my laptop's on 1%. I didn't even notice. So let's wrap this. Let's go through and recap the picks real quick. I got Adrian Yanez, but Davy Grant is a live dog. Jojo Wood beating Tyler Santos. Kyung Ho Kong beats Ronnie Yaya because of the wrestling. Sean Brady beats Michael Chiesa because of the control. I think he's got better control. And Misha Tate, once again, a better wrestler than Catlin Vieira. I think she gets it to the ground and finds a way to win. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I greatly appreciate it. If you guys enjoyed the content, hit the subscribe button. All that good shit, right? Like, comment, all that good stuff. Let me know what you think of the fights, who you think's going to win, and I will catch you guys later. Bye-bye.